Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Faith Radio Mornings here for the 20th of December. Hard to believe that we are just 5 days away from celebrating Christmas. It is such a great time of the year to be part of Christian radio like this, to be on the journey with all of you, because we can say unashamedly and unabashedly that we will fix our eyes on our King Jesus and celebrate his birth some 2,000 years ago that instituted and inaugurated a kingdom that knows no end. And it's a kingdom in which we participate day in and day out as we do the news and the lifestyle topics of the day. We certainly are going to keep our hearts and our minds and our eyes fixed right on our Savior, Jesus Christ. Happy to be in the studio with you as your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, and I am here with Rachel Sutton, who's on the sound and the board. She has to remind me some mornings to actually use a microphone. That's my level of radio expertise. She does a great job holding this whole thing together. Paul Perreault, of course, brings the news, and you hear his voice in other ways throughout the morning and the show. I love their input and their impact and the guests that they bring each morning to help us think through so many of these issues. And as we get started this morning for the 20th of December, if you were listening yesterday, I read a short section from Max Lucado's classic book, God Came Near. It's a book I highly recommend for this time of year. It's great for kids. It's great reading in general to think about the impact of Jesus coming into this world. And he does such a great descriptive job, as Lucado often does, in talking about so many of these different events. And so in reading the first half of the section yesterday, I'm going to read the second half today. And what I especially appreciate about this section of the text is he's reminding us that we do still live in a bit of an advent now, where we are waiting the second coming of Jesus. And in that waiting time, we continue to walk out life in this world. So Lucado writes this about the first birth and then into the second coming. He says that God had come near. He came not as a flash of light or as an unapproachable conqueror, but as one whose first cries were heard by a peasant girl and a sleepy carpenter. The hands that first held him were unmanicured, calloused, and dirty. No silk or ivory, hype or party, no hoopla. Were it not for the shepherds, there would have been no reception, and were it not for a group of stargazers, there would have been no gifts. Angels watched as Mary changed God's diaper. The universe watched with wonder as the Almighty learned to walk. Children played in the street with him, and he had the synagogue leader in Nazareth known who was listening to his sermons. To think about Jesus in such a light as this seems almost irrelevant, doesn't it? It's not something we like to do. It's uncomfortable. It's much easier to keep the humanity out of the incarnation, clean the manure from around the manger, wipe the sweat out of his eyes, pretend he never snored or blew his nose or hit his thumb with a hammer. Jesus is somehow easier to stomach that way. There is something about keeping him divine that keeps him distant, packaged, and predictable. But don't do it. For heaven's sake, don't. Let him be as human as he intended to be. Let him into the mire, into the muck of our daily world, for only if we let him in it can he pull us out of it. So listen to him, for this all happened in a moment. In one moment, a most remarkable moment, the Word became flesh. But make no mistake, there will be another. The world will see another instantaneous transformation. You see, in becoming man, God made it possible for man to see God. When Jesus went home, he left the back door open, and as a result, we will all be changed in a moment, in the twinkling of an eye. The first moment of transformation went unnoticed by this world, but you can bet your sweet September that the second one won't. The next time you use the phrase, just a moment, remember, that's all the time it will take to change this world. Welcome again to Faith Radio Mornings, 5 days before celebrating the birth of our King. We'll take a short break and have Ben Johnson join us on the program, and we'll talk about some of the news of the morning.
This is my right, a right given by God to live.
Of course, that music means that regular Thursday morning contributor Ben Johnson of the Acton Institute is going to join us here on Faith Radio Mornings to talk about some of the news of the day. Ben has been in journalism for many years. He's also a minister of the faith, bringing those two things together and to bear on the headlines of the day. Good morning, Ben.
Good morning. Good to be with you, Peter.
Yeah, it's hard to believe that we're right on the threshold of Christmas, Ben. It feels like just yesterday that you and I were talking about the beginning of Advent, and here we are just 5 days away.
Yes, but according to what I see in the stores, it's been Christmas for at least 3 months.
That's good. I'm not sure the Christmas trees ever come down out of places like Target and Walmart to commercialize this thing, right?
Yeah, to have 24 hours a day. You're right.
Absolutely. Well, lots to get into this morning relative to some of the headlines. I know there was some news breaking yesterday. You and I haven't had a ton of time to process and digest this, so maybe a first blush take on the fact that President Trump, seemingly a little bit surprisingly to everybody around him, ordered the withdrawal of the of our troops from Syria. What's kind of your first take on this, Ben?
You're right. It seems like everybody was sort of gobsmacked by this decision of his. His advisors have advised against it, but I'll tell you, I think that generally this is probably a good move on his part. The fact of the matter is the United States has been involved in Syria covertly for much of the Obama administration and longer than that. But the Obama administration had sided with some Syrian rebels who were trying to overthrow Bashar Assad, the son of dictator Hafez al-Assad. There's no question the Assad regime is unbelievably brutal. They gas their own people. It's ghastly. They're an authoritarian, brutal, repressive regime. No doubt about it. However, the CIA had shipped weapons to these rebels, which ended up in the hands of ISIS. So our tax dollars are actually actively funding the persecution of the Nazarenes, as they are called, the Christians of the Middle East by ISIS. And, The factions that we're supporting quite often end up being led by people who are aligned with the most extreme Islamists in the area. So it's good that we are no longer involved in supporting this regional civil war. It should shake out as it does on its own. The United States doesn't have any particular vital interest, as I can tell, in choosing to destabilize the region and empower ISIS in one more country.
Well, it's really interesting to watch him make good on some of his political promises. And it's not always the case with any president, including President Trump, but he certainly did advocate for a non-interventionist policy around the world.
He did. And not only is this an issue in terms of that country, but the New York Times reported back in 2012 that there were arms shipments that had been diverted to Syria. But in some cases, those arms shipments also ended up in Libya. And again, they ended up in the hands of extreme jihadists in Libya as well. So the United States, in attempting to help what we had been told were peaceful democratic rebels, and there are some in Syria, there's no question about it, the Free Syrian Army among them, had instead ended up getting involved in something that we don't understand the situation on the ground. We don't know the players. And if we did, then we funneled them to the wrong people. But ultimately, the United States was assisting the persecution of our fellow Christians around the world. So hopefully this will help bring some stability and some peace to that region, especially this time of year.
Certainly, some of his critics are suggesting, Ben, that there's quite a bit of risk that in pulling out, there isn't going to be any kind of stable influence, and that some of the maybe more corrupt or evil even factions will begin to take over. What do you see relative to some of those risks?
It's hard to know who would be more evil than the factions that are already in power.
So
you have the Assad regime, which again gasses its own people. It's incredibly repressive. And the Assad regime is aligned with Iran and with Russia. And that's really the sort of geopolitical axis that they're concerned with. On the other hand, the group that is destabilizing them, again, is part of ISIS. They're extreme Islamists, and the Assad regime, at a minimum, was protecting the religious liberty of Christian minorities and other religious minorities in the area, Yazidis and others. And you see that when Syria comes into power, all of those rights are destroyed. And you see what, quite frankly, is the genocide of Christians in the cradle of Christianity in the Middle East.
Talking with Ben Johnson this morning from the Acton Institute. He joins me regularly on Thursdays, and so fun to talk through some of these headlines and bringing his experience to bear. Ben, there's other news coming out this time New York City and Wall Street, where I can't follow all of the volatility on Wall Street and the stock market each day, Ben, but yesterday it looked like the market was up somewhere around a billion points in the morning, and then the Fed raised rates in the afternoon and indicated they might continue to do so in the interest rates, and then the market went down about a billion points. Where are we with the stock market, Ben? I can't keep up.
Well, you're right not to be able to. There's tremendous volatility because of the reasons that you mentioned. The Federal Reserve has decided it's going to end its policy of essentially handing out as much money as humanly possible and cranking up the printing presses. Instead, they've raised rates, which is a continuation of its policy since Trump has been in office. The Federal Reserve generally has a policy which goes back at least to the Bush administration, the late Reagan years even, that whenever there's in a hot economy, that's going to lead to inflation, and inflation ends up chewing people's paycheck up, and they don't have the purchasing power that they did. So the Federal Reserve raises rates in order to take liquidity out of the market and make sure that inflation doesn't ensue. Now, quite frankly, we should add, first of all, that there's some questions whether this is true or not. Second of all, I don't think that inflation is the great risk of our time, and instead a poor economy is a much greater risk. It's something that we've seen under the Obama administration. The Federal Reserve was involved in quantitative easing, which was simply printing up as much money as possible. It maintained tremendous liquidity in order to prop the economy up artificially, and it has been doing so both in the Obama years, but also under George W. Bush. And frankly, none of this is in the constitutional mandate. None of this is either constitutional nor in the original legislation of the Federal Reserve. It was intended to be a banker of last resort that would loan money to banks if they couldn't get it anywhere else at a higher rate of interest than they could get anywhere on the market. And instead, the Fed has taken it upon itself to regulate the entire economy, according to its unelected board of appointees. So there's some question as to whether they should be involved in this at all constitutionally and even to some extent morally.
Well, it sure is interesting to watch. And I know for many people, probably the specter and the ghost of 2007-08 and the Great Recession and the crashing of the stock market brings some fear to mind. But in this case, it sure seems like this is just part of the normal volatility of the stock market. We're talking with Ben Johnson here of the Acton Institute. We'll take a short break. And Ben, lots more to get into, including the budget border wall showdown in Washington, D.C., as well as some updates out of France and the Yellow Vest movement. So lots more to come with our friend Ben Johnson on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings here at about 20 minutes past the hour. I'm your host, Peter Kapsner, joined by Ben Johnson of the Acton Institute, and we're talking about many of the headlines in the day. And there's a lot to get to here, Ben, including some news about the budget and the border wall showdown. And again, it's like the stock market. I can't keep up with presidential policy on this one. There seems a bit of volatility here. One day there's a tweet that says he will never give up the wall and that he's willing to take ownership of the shutdown. And the next thing we know, we got a continuing resolution to keep the budget in place, and there might even be some compromise on the wall. So what do we see moving forward on this one, Ben?
Hard to know what is going on from one moment to the next, as you said. President Trump demanded $5 billion in the budget to build his wall, and he met with Chuck and Nancy, as we saw on television. They didn't want the cameras there. He brought the cameras in, and they had that robust, to say the least, debate on television. And they both told him up front, you're not going to get your wall. Now, with the Democrats in charge of Congress when the new year starts, this lame duck session is really the only chance that they have in order to get the funding through. However, to get it through the Senate, you have to be able to break the deadlock, which would mean you would have at least 10 Democrats, essentially, who would vote for that funding. It's hard to see how they would do that and survive under the next 2 to 4 years, depending on how that would work for them, in some cases six. Under Schumer. So it would threaten their position, certainly their ability to be a chairman if they vote against what Chuck Schumer is telling them to do. It's hard for me to see any Democrat voting to give Trump money to fund his most important presidential aspiration, which could get him reelected, and to be accused of cooperating with him in what the Democratic base considers to be a racist endeavor in building a wall or in border security in general. So I think that Trump was hoping to get this money. The most recent version of the Senate bill strips out any kind of funding that had been there. There had been just a little over $1 billion. That money is gone. So it's hard to see exactly how he's going to get this going forward unless he's able to divert money that is in the budget somewhere in order to build it from another fund someplace else in the budget. It's just very difficult to see.
Yeah, and watching that meeting, as you referenced with Chuck and Nancy, he is sort of described how the wall was getting built in ways that maybe we didn't understand with some of the previous funding. And it sure seems like this is a critical issue for him. If he comes into the 2020 election cycle without having made good on what was the chanted promise at all the rallies, build that wall, that would put him at pretty significant political risk.
It's difficult to see what sort of credibility he would have. He would have to do one of two things. Really, he'd have to do two things. One of them is, obviously, he can blame the Democrats for the lack of action. Harry Truman did that. He got reelected as president in 1948 on that. Of course, Ronald Reagan was always able to blame the Democrats in Congress in the 1980s, and legitimately so. However, he also has 2 years in the beginning of his administration where action was not taken, and he has to say that somehow there was a Republican juggernaut that kept him from seeing his goal as well. And that's a lot more difficult when he's going to say in an election year, the Republican leadership is terrible, this party is led by people who oppose me, and it's 2020, it's election year, go out and vote for them.
Talking to Ben Johnson this morning about some of the headlines of the day. And Ben, as we have a few minutes left here, I would love to make sure we get to some good news coming out of Washington, D.C., and some bipartisan negotiation and working together. And that's where we see perhaps some needed reform to the criminal justice system.
Well, this bill has passed. It sort of came out of nowhere. It's something that has a lot of support bipartisan, but both Republicans, Democrats, and also libertarians who believe that there are certain aspects of the criminal justice system that punish people. Frankly, my only regret on this is that Chuck Colson didn't live to see this because it has many of the things that he had asked for and had championed throughout his life. Everyone who is in prison has obviously made a mistake, and nonetheless, Colson offered them an opportunity to find Jesus the same place that he found them, right there in the midst of that isolation and in the midst of that pain. Jesus calls us to go into the prisons, and Chuck Colson took that up, and hopefully this will make it even that much easier for prisoners to transition after the fact so that they're not branded for the rest of their lives unable to find work.
Well, and certainly for people that are coming out of prison, there are support systems that are needed. And so, yes, it's a really important thing to reform the bill and maybe not destine people for life behind bars on every possible offense. And at the same time, what's the invitation to us as believers, to us as a country, to help do some of the change, transformation, rehabilitation process so people don't slip right back into things, Ben? Because in having dealt with some of these situations, you can see a hopelessness even coming out of prison.
Well, I would say, first of all, let's remember, biblically speaking, in the Bible, there's no such thing as Jesus ever commanding people or the Bible ever commanding people to go to jail. There's restitution. If people steal from someone, they have to pay back even more than what they took. And instead, we have a prison system where people go to prison. They become hardened and embittered. They're around other criminals. Frankly, they learn to become better criminals while they're in prison. And it sort of leads to a vicious cycle where imprisonment follows imprisonment, and you have the cycle of recidivism. And also because of their past in prison, they're unable to get certain jobs that would allow them to escape that. For us as believers, I think that the most important thing we can do is share the gospel with them, tell them that Christ came to the outcast. Christ was himself a prisoner, so was John the Baptist. In their case, certainly for Christ, it was without justification. In their cases, it may be fully justified. But nonetheless, Christ came to justify all of us through his perfect offering of righteousness and his sacrifice of himself upon the cross. So we bring that message to them. We can show them that there's a better way for their life.
And I think the next thing is to empower them with skills, job skills, and other opportunities to give them a chance to show that they have been redeemed. Keep an eye on them, certainly, but to give them an opportunity if they truly wish to have a new life, we have to be willing to find a place for them to offer their gifts in society and to advance and leave their past behind.
It's Ben Johnson. And Ben, we're just had a little trouble with some of the connection on Skype there right at the end. But, boy, we certainly enjoyed your wisdom and your insight. I appreciate you coming on this morning on Faith Radio Mornings yet again, just the diligence that you've had all throughout this past year. And I know you and I taped some review and preview shows that will air next week, and looking forward to catching up again live after the new year.
Thank you, and God bless.
Take a break here for Lighten Up and some bottom of the hour news. In the second half of this hour, Kim Cotola from Cradle of My Heart Radio will join us, and we'll talk with some updates around some of the different abortion decisions coming out of Washington, D.C. Well, interesting news coming from our friends in North and South Dakota, and that in both states, population has climbed significantly over the past couple of years. In fact, in North Dakota, we see that population has climbed to a record high in July 3rd. First, with the U.S. Census Bureau, they said over 760,000 people now live in North Dakota. That's an increase of 4,900 people from just a year ago. I have to say, it sounds pretty compelling to grab a swath of land in North Dakota while it's still available, get off the grid, feed the chickens, and get out of Dodge and all the craziness of our world. Yesterday on Faith Radio Mornings, I was joined by Dr. Christopher Yuan, and he was giving us some input about how to come out of the gay lifestyle and addressing the issue of homosexuality.
When I lived as a gay man, everything around me was gay. All my friends were gay. I bought groceries at a gay Kroger. My apartment complex was 95% gay men. I mean, literally just my whole world, my whole personhood was gay, and the world was telling me that. So what we need to, I think, as Christians, as we engage with our loved ones and friends in the gay community, before we address the sinful behavior, I think we need to address this issue of identity. And honestly, I think that's less volatile, because when we, the reason why our gay loved ones are so offended when we talk about this as sin, they don't hear, what we say is, you know, what you're doing is a sin. What you're doing is not the will of God. But when they hear us say that, they hear us saying that their whole identity, their whole person as a whole is sin. And we need to be able to differentiate who we are with our sexuality.
So appreciative of Christopher Wan's voice in terms of just addressing this issue on homosexuality. I know that probably many of you have accessed his books and maybe seen some of his podcasts and interviews. He does such a great job bringing some wisdom and some insight into what is a very difficult situation. And if you want to catch that entire segment, you can go to myfaithradio.com and search over yesterday's program and see all of what Christopher had to say. Well, we've already been chatting with Kim Cotola this morning. I know that's another voice with which you're familiar. And we're going to talk a little bit about some of the events out of Washington, D.C., with the abortion conversation, as well as some interesting Facebook saga material in which people were trolling a woman who admitted to having an abortion, and maybe we can think of some much more constructive reactions.
God's power is made perfect in weakness. This is Jim Garlow. Paul wrote to the church in Corinth saying, "But God chose the foolish things of the world to shame the wise. God chose the weak things of the world to shame the strong." When the odds seem stacked against you, maybe God has moved so that He'll get all the glory. God knew the hearts of the Israelites, that they were going to take the glory if He hadn't intervened to whittle down their numbers and strength. He said, "I'm going to strip you down so much that when victory happens, you can't take any credit for it." There is a temptation within all of us to be glory hogs. But think about it. Without God, we have no air to breathe, no life to call our own, no universe. There's no getting around it. God gets all the glory. This is Jim Garlow. It's time to take a stand for what we believe as followers of Christ. Go to jimgarlow.com. There's much more.
Come, they told me, a newborn king to see, pa-rum-pa-pum-pum.
Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings. We're on the line with Kim Cotola right now from Cradle My Heart. It's a voice I know that you're familiar with if you've been listening to Faith Radio for any amount of time. Good morning, Kim.
Good morning. How are you, Peter?
Well, we're doing pretty well here in studio, enjoying just the run-up to Christmas. It's really fun to be a part of this each morning and to hear the music that Rachel plays coming in and out of breaks and just really fix our eyes on Jesus, our King. Are there certain things that you're doing during the season to celebrate and prepare for Christmas?
We are traveling, so our adult kids live all over the country, and we're heading to Portland tomorrow, and then we'll be in Chicago at some point. We were just in the Twin Cities, and so, yeah, we've got our bags packed.
Well, certainly, Kim, in our country over the last maybe 20, 30 years, there's been an increase in the possibility of mobility. People tend to move a lot further away from their roots a lot of times. And so as we get into late stages of parenting and into grandparenting, there's quite a bit of invitation to be doing just what you're doing, which is traveling all over to see the kids.
Well, and I think for Christmas Day, Bruce and I will be sitting and looking at each other over probably a turkey breast, maybe not a big meal with all the fixings. It'll just be probably just the two of us on the day, which is okay. We've sort of staked out Labor Day and told them we own you on Labor Day. You may not go to the other spouse's parents or make plans with friends. You will come our way on Labor Day. So
I love that. Pick a holiday and have your kids be indentured servants for those days.
Yes.
It sounds like a great policy.
Yes, that's the plan.
Well, there certainly is a number of headlines that are coming out of just the sort of the life conversations, abortion and pro-life, pro-choice conversations. And I so appreciate you coming on with a voice of experience and wisdom on this issue. And I know a couple of weeks ago, there seemed to be a bit of consternation for some who would have supported Justice Kavanaugh becoming part of the Supreme Court, assuming that abortion was going to be overturned immediately, only to see him vote in favor of not really taking up the case for Planned Parenthood or seeking to defund them. What was your read of that situation, Kim?
Well, this case that Kavanaugh sided with liberal judges and the justices and decided not to hear the cases were cases in Louisiana and Kansas. And really, these two cases stem all the way back from 2015 when states decided that, look, Planned Parenthood is credibly engaging in illegal activities with fetal remains and the way that they're handling them and perhaps selling them. And these videos presented evidence of that. And so many states said, we're not going to fund them if they're, you know, doing these illegal activities. Louisiana and Kansas said, we don't want Planned Parenthood receiving Medicaid funds. And they announced plans to terminate that, because of those videos directly. So the Planned Parenthood locations in those two states sued, and the lower courts agreed that they have a right to challenge a state's decision to cut off the funding of the providers because of the way that the Medicaid regulations work. Well, Kavanaugh voted with Justice Roberts and other more liberal justices in declining to hear those two cases. And, you know, ordinarily that wouldn't actually be made public, but the dissent was published in which Justice Thomas scorched the justices who voted against hearing these cases. And he said, look, just because this involves Planned Parenthood and maybe those videos, that doesn't mean we don't get to do our job. We get to not do our job, essentially. I'm paraphrasing, of course. But he said, we need to hear these cases. But some who are not as concerned about Justice Kavanaugh voting with the more liberal-minded justices have said, look, there are other cases that are pending and that will be deciding the same issues and perhaps may not involve Planned Parenthood directly. And so they're taking more of a wait-and-see attitude. Others who expected him to be solidly and 100% pro-life in all of his decisions are obviously clearly disappointed.
Well, and I know we can't get into the mind of Justice Kavanaugh, Kim, but it was interesting to see the vote was 6-3. So even if he had voted in favor on the opposite direction, it would have been 5-4 and a losing issue. Is it possible that any of this was a bit of a political ploy on some level, knowing just how rancorous the process was and to deflect some of the attention away from what people were so concerned about?
Well, yeah, some people have said that that's exactly what he was doing, that he was throwing a bone to, you know, Susan Collins, who voted to confirm him, and to Dianne Feinstein for her concerns that he was going to be trashing women's rights. I mean, if that's your stand, is that abortion is, you know, needed policy for women's rights, then clearly you see Justice Kavanaugh as a threat with, you know, holding some sort of a swing vote there on those issues as they would come up at the Supreme Court. So some people have speculated that that's what he's doing. If that's what he's doing, that's even more concerning, I think, because then he really is engaging in politics over issues that should instead be centered on the law.
Well, and certainly as much as the Supreme Court would like to be above some of the political scene, there was enough evidence within some of what happened there during the process that at least politics to some degree is part of the deal. But it was really interesting to see him embraced by all of the judges when he was finally confirmed. And so maybe there is some hope, Kim, that not everything becomes political at the end of the day.
Yeah. And, you know, of course, I mean, I am hoping for the best with Justice Kavanaugh. He himself appeared to make it somewhat political in the hearings when he brought up the Clintons, because he had a role in the Ken Starr investigation that led to the impeachment of Bill Clinton. And, you know, so he apparently feels that there were politics in play in trying to block him. Now, I don't know if that means that he will play politics himself. It all remains to be seen. But, yeah, he definitely did not jump on a chance to take on a pro-life case with these two cases from Louisiana and Kansas.
Talking with Kim Cotola this morning from Cradle My Heart. And Kim, in just a moment when we come back from break, I would love to change the conversation into something that happened on Facebook where a woman came out and talked about her abortion and some of the trolling that happened that typically is representative of more of a left-leaning mob scene on Twitter. But boy, it was a really ugly situation. So I would love to brainstorm with you and hear your thoughts about how we as believers can handle these situations in a much more constructive way. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings here on the 20th of December, just 5 days before Christmas, and we're chatting with Kim Cotola, a voice with which you are familiar if you listen at any point in time to Faith Radio Network. And Kim, there's some interesting information coming out of a woman who posted some of her personal information about having an abortion on Facebook, and let's just say that social media isn't always the best place to post anything personal.
Oh my goodness. Amen. The end.
And certainly the responses that we saw with this, you know, it harkened back to some of the more extremist in which some abortion doctors have been shot. I remember that several years ago, and this was just not a good situation at all.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that, you know, and it plays into the hands of abortion rights activists who say that, you know, abortion opponents just want to control women. So this woman put up a post earlier this month, about a week ago, saying that she was going to abort her baby because her family just couldn't swing having another child. She and her husband have two children. And she posted the ultrasound and wrote, "Baby, I loved you with all my heart, but you just weren't meant to be with us right now. We're going through a lot. You deserved all the love in the world. Your brother and sister would have loved you, too. Rest easy, baby love. You'll never be forgotten." Hashtag abortion. So, I mean, if you're going to put something like that out there, she said in other posts that, you know, when the backlash started, that her intent on doing this was not to seek attention or to receive support, but to help other women who were facing decisions like hers and to try to reduce the stigma around abortion. Now, if you are trying to reduce the stigma around abortion, is it because you feel a stigma? And is it because you know that what you're doing isn't right? I mean, I have so much that I would like to discuss with the woman who actually put this post up. But what happened next was just, you know, horrendous. It not only did this, of course, a lot of people were commenting, you could have found a loving family for your baby, you shouldn't have done that, and worse. But one guy took it upon himself to find her address, go to her home, and when her husband opened the door, they threw condoms in his face.
Mm.
We do not claim this person nor this behavior in any pro-life community that I've ever been a part of, Peter. It's just that is not pro-life behavior. That does not represent the pro-life community. And I feel it's really important as a woman who has had an abortion myself to say that, you know, the welcome that I found from the pro-life community was a complete shock and such a surprise and such a relief to me. The people that I met after I disclosed my abortion, who were pro-life, were so kind and had such a gentle touch with me. And every word and every action pointed me toward reconciliation with God and with my past, that I don't recognize this guy. I think that he's unhinged. I think that it's reprehensible what he's done. And I think that it's profoundly and completely unchristian. God's word says in Romans that it's his kindness that leads us to repentance. Mm-hmm. Right? And we are to judge abortion as morally wrong. The scriptures are clear on that, that as salt and light, we are to have an opinion on this issue. And based on God's word, we know that abortion is wrong because it's the killing of an innocent human being. It sheds innocent blood, which God's word says we're not to do. Our opinion on this is vital. The culture needs us proclaiming that truth. But we never, this side of heaven, ever get to sit in a place of sentencing and condemnation spiritually of others. And so from the worldly viewpoint and from a heavenly viewpoint, it's not our role to condemn anyone. We speak truth and leave the rest to God.
It's Kim Cotola's voice talking with some wisdom and some balance on this issue. And Kim, I really appreciate that, just your insight into this, because otherwise we risk, when somebody dominates the headlines in this way, then everything just gets lumped all together and assumptions are made about either the pro-choice or the pro-life community. And the reality is that what you experienced, just because we can discern and judge things as right or wrong, doesn't demand a certain reaction of, you know, as you said in the story, throwing condoms in somebody's face and coming at that reaction. We can be good moral judgment with having a very different reaction of hope and restoration.
Well, and it's ignorant on so many levels, because, you know, this whole thing of use birth control or don't have it, you know, keep your legs closed. Sorry. I mean, that's the cruder way that people will say that, people who claim to be pro-life. You know, 2/3 of abortions are driven by a contraception failure. There's this assumption that people are not being responsible and that's the reason they need abortion. Well, that's a myth. You know, a contraception is not foolproof. And, of course, abortion is out there because of that fact. The people who sell the contraception are generally the same people who are selling the abortion or advocating for it. And so, you know, to throw condom at someone because you knew they had an abortion is foolish, ignorant, and ridiculous. It's a non sequitur, really. It has no bearing on a person's experience. And I think that, again, all of the leading pro-life organizations that I've ever been aware of or affiliated with would condemn such actions. Americans United for Life, the Susan B. Anthony List, the National Right to Life, all of these organizations, Peter, would say that violence is not the answer. And stalking someone and confronting and harassing them is violent. And it has no place in upholding the dignity of all human life.
Yeah, it's well said. And Kim, I know there's one other issue to get to this morning here before we wrap things up. And that is that 2019, we're anticipating the release of the movie Unplanned that chronicles the Abby Johnson story. And the actress came out that was playing Abby Johnson and said, "I'm very glad I did this, even if I'm blacklisted from Hollywood." So remind our listeners who Abby Johnson was and what is behind this movie.
Abby Johnson was a director of one of the bigger Planned Parenthoods in the country, in Texas, and she had a couple of abortions and was called one day. She was on the marketing side, if you will, of the operation, not the medical side, but she was called in to assist with an ultrasound-led abortion and was shattered to see what she saw on the screen, and she became pro-life, and she's now very vocal in not only standing for unborn life, but also for helping people come out of the abortion industry and into rehabilitation from having worked in what are very degrading circumstances in most abortion facilities. Her story is now being told based on her book, Unplanned, and the young actress, Ashley Brachter, who's playing her in the film, found out as she was telling her mother about this new assignment that her mother had almost aborted her. Peter, and it had gotten to the point where she was on the table ready to undergo the procedure when a pregnant nurse came in, and she said, "I couldn't go through with it. I knew that, you know, this was my child." She and who later, the man who later became her husband, were just in desperate circumstances, not being able to see how they could afford to have this baby, which is the backstory of so many families and couples who abort. And so Ashley told that story on Fox and Friends earlier this week, and I urge you to find that video, because just seeing how broken she still is over learning the reprieve that she received and her compassion for her mother and the situation, you know, that had driven that decision, I think really may change some hearts and minds on whether abortion is actually a compassionate choice.
Yeah, Kim, we have just about a minute left here, but representing some of these things in media outlets like this and even through movies, it really does have the opportunity to affect public perception, doesn't it?
I think so. And, you know, what we have to remember is that, you know, science affirms that life begins at conception. And so we cannot secure women's rights at the expense of the lives of other human beings. And we have to find solutions that honor and love them both.
Well, we certainly love your voice here on Faith Radio Mornings. It's been so great to chat with you this past year. I know we're off next week for some best of shows, but look forward to catching up after the new year. Again, Kim, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
Merry Christmas, Peter, to you and everybody at Faith Radio.
We'll take a break here and wrap up our first hour of the show and preview what's coming up next in Hour 2 for Faith Radio Mornings. Enjoyable first hour of the show. I certainly love chatting with Ben Johnson, bringing his wisdom and his insight into the headlines of the day. And there was a lot to cover this morning in that first half of the hour. And, of course, the soothing tones of Kim Cattola talking about such important topics such as the right to life from a balanced perspective and just bringing both hope into the situation as well as some discernment about right and wrong. And appreciate her voice and grateful for her coming onto the show. Looking forward to hour two. It's Thursday morning, and that means that my friend, Dr. Jim Bilby, professor of Christian theology, will be joining us. We'll do our Ask Anything segment. Lots of topics to get to there. But most importantly, there is a special guest in studio that came along with Jim this morning, and I cannot wait to talk to her about some experiences in traveling overseas. So lots more to come in Hour 2 for Faith Radio Mornings.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.